All right, all right, all right.
We got the best intro song of all time.
War is a racket, y'all.
Yeah. That's another cranker out there from Toxic. Total Chaos. Was it Toxic?
Yeah, for sure. I'm so glad to be here. It's great to talk to you guys and to continue doing what we've been doing through it all. I'm feeling so positive lately about things. I know there's a lot of division and despair out there, and I've kind of felt it from friends. You know, you could say kind of like this COVID thing just hitting them in all kinds of ways, and I know we're going to get into that and more in this episode.
Yeah, we got a whole lot to cover today, so thank you guys for being here. Again, we are Freethinker Radio. We do this every Wednesday evening about this time, 8 p.m. Central, and we are part of KPFT, 90.1 KPFT Houston. You can find us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. I know you wanted to cover some shows, Micah, but do you want to get into the news first? Then
yeah, let's get into the news. Let's just step right into it. We've got a lot of Houston stuff going on for sure, and we've been covering the Tuttles for a while, but we've been quiet. But it turns out that there's some new news there. I'd like to just get into that
because yeah, let's do that.
It turns out that the district attorney Kim Ogg, it's a peculiar case, said a charge is dismissed against one of the police officers in the Tuttle murders. Not Goins, but one of the other gentlemen. I guess I shouldn't call them gentlemen if they are maybe murdering people. Stating that the prosecutor, quote, raised concerns about this judgment while working the case. The DA's office has not identified the prosecutor that has since been terminated. The murder charge against the former HPD officer, Felipe Gallegos, will be reconsidered after all the evidence is reviewed again by a different prosecutor and presented to a judge. Gallegos is still charged with engaging in organized criminal activity in connection to the raid that left Regina Nicholas and Dennis Tuttle, as well as their dog Star, dead. So news in that the murder charge against Felipe Gallegos is not going to, you know, is basically at least on hold being reconsidered due to some actions of the prosecutor. So I'm not sure what to think about that, but I expect we'll hear a lot more about that.
Yeah, that's how long has this case been unfolding now? I feel like it started when I came into the show. Must be 2 or 3 years now.
Yeah, like
we're
2 years.
Just now dealing with like all the arrests and like finalizing like these things. It takes a while, man, but it's a sad story.
It hit like in a January or something like that, I believe, right? We were like talking about it from day one. And I think you started around that time. And so we're now 2 years and 8 months, I believe, into it. So that's, you're right, almost 3 years. That's severe. But, you know, in the face of that, you know, I guess it's good that the public is somewhat out, you know, incensed about it, and that, you know, truth is being sought for the Tuttles and Regina Nicholas and Star. And I think, you know, the next story kind of feeds into a concern about police reform. And it turns out that, and also something that we've covered a lot, one of the first introductions to the state that, you know, young, fragile spirits have, the school districts, you know, and you know, basically some police reform for HISD of all places. A coalition of advocacy groups, of which One Houston is part, has called for 4 key changes that would prohibit police officers at school. Tell me what y'all think about this, guys. From pepper spraying students, using zip ties on students as handcuffs, arresting students on campus for nonviolent offenses, and questioning students about alleged crimes without a parent or guardian present. And I would go ahead and assume that if a parent or guardian isn't present, then probably neither is a lawyer. But they probably wouldn't say that a child has any rights, I don't know, until they want to get in the parent's life. So what do y'all think about that, these reforms that are being called for in the ISD?
Well, I remember being at Tomball High School and being told that we didn't have any rights at school. I remember being told that, and it really bothered me because in Ohio, where I used to go to school for the first 2 years of high school, we didn't have a cop on hand at school. So I always thought that was kind of funny business to begin with. But I mean, what kind of police can't handle kids? I mean, that's my question. You're trained to handle grown adults. I'm not saying there aren't like strong kids, but like, shouldn't the measures involve more, like, you know, hypothetically, worst case scenario, some kid is, you know, getting in a fight or being violent, you know, shouldn't they be able to use some kind of de-escalation? Like, we're always promoting for police de-escalation techniques, so maybe put the kid in a hold of some kind. I don't know about zip ties. I mean, that sounds like just unnecessary. Like, why not? I mean,
that sounds like some POW stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what they're using, what, Guantanamo? And I mean, you know, like handcuffs should do fine or like whatever. Like, obviously, worst case scenario is always school shooter. So they should be, if in that case, you know, they should be able to.
You might have to zip tie someone if you're like,
yeah. So that's hypothetically, I'm saying like worst case scenario. I mean, you're probably not even going to be pepper spraying that kid. I mean, it's going to be something maybe worse. So, yeah. But hypothetically, you know, like some kid gets out of line, he's getting in a fight. Maybe he throws a desk at a teacher. I don't know. But I'm just saying like we could, I mean, you don't, it's unnecessary to pepper spray a child of any age up until, you know, hypothetically 18, 19. And especially, I don't agree with the no rights thing because you're right. It's almost kind of gross how you could just intimidate a kid who knows nothing. You know, he's just now learning about the Constitution and his rights in school. So he's not going to know to ask for a lawyer. They're not going to know what to do. And I don't know. I've always had strong feelings about that. I think that kids are going to be kids in high school. And if you're not ready for that, then don't teach high school. Don't be a part of the high school because, like, there are going to be fights. There's going to be little scuffs. But we should be able to correct them and put them on a better path instead of doing something more permanent, you know, causing eye damage with pepper spray or psychological damage maybe with the zip tie thing and embarrassing them and those kinds of things.
Yeah, I think you're right. I also think, you know, maybe there needs to be some sort of different training that cops go to, you know. When you're going to teach like kindergarten and first grade, don't you go through different stuff than if you're going to teach the high school? I don't know. It seems like you'd have a different approach to teaching them. And, you know, it seems like there would be a different approach to even the rule of law, for lack of a better word.
So. Yeah, I just want to say, I think I'm with Johnny on the sense that I remember when I was first told in high school, you don't have rights. I remember that the day that that happened, like there was some injustice happening. Somebody was getting their locker searched and we were like, hey, you can't do that. We have rights. And they're like, no, you don't. They sort of laughed at us. Like, as soon as you come to, I remember them saying, as soon as you come to those school doors, you have no rights. Like, we basically own you. And I'm putting the question to the audience. Do you think children have rights? And if yes, do they lose them at school? Rika over on DLive says they don't lose their rights at school because rights can't be taken away. Their rights are 100% violated at school. So I think that's interesting, you know, just to bring that up. And she also mentions that the police do train, different police departments train with the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, you know, so a lot of these tactics we're seeing coming from the police. I don't know about this particular, you know, district, Houston School District, but they do come from training with military.
And over the decade, this show's been on, we've presented numerous horrific cases of, I remember an 8-year-old handcuffed to a chair in a room and just all kinds of horrible cases. So these things do exist. And obviously we probably have highlighted some of the worst ones that have happened over the time that we knew of, but there's a reason for that. And I think, you know, that's what has to be, maybe what Johnny's pointing to is maybe there needs to be rules of engagement, you know, like when an officer does something. And like Johnny, I went to a school district that didn't have officers. And, you know, I imagine if some kid did something like criminally insane or something, an officer would show up. But, you know,
I mean, if there's no weapon on the kid, then there shouldn't be a weapon on the cop. You know, like if you're a cop at the school and you can't take down any kid, then what are you doing there? I mean,
and as a parent, what are you doing to pay taxes, pay property taxes, or just pay any of this stuff and send your kid to a place that's going to teach them they have no rights and subject them to these sort of thinking? I mean, I'm not saying go pull your kid right now, but I'm saying you need to reflect on this and probably have some conversations because if you're not, the teachers are, obviously. I mean, so anyway, I guess we should move on.
Yeah, let's go ahead and move to the next one. I got a couple of stories that I wanted to cover. Nothing too groundbreaking, but important.
Yeah.
And I think worth covering.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Let me see if I can pull this up. Okay, so Micah, did you want to cover this other one about the body cam?
The woman that was arrested and beaten.
I mean, I don't know if it's worth mentioning. It's another beating like we were just talking about. I mean,
so there's been another beat down and the deputies were put on leave, which I think is paid vacation or something like that. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm being too brutal, but
all right. Well, I'll go ahead and pull up this next one here. This one is just about my friend, Mayor Turner. Some of you might have heard about him.
Buddy.
So today, you guys ever heard that phrase, build back better? You're familiar with it? Heard it over the last year or so?
Once or twice. Maybe on a sign.
Yeah, so it started being promoted from the World Economic Forum, people behind the Great Reset, and then Joe Biden's campaign started using it, and we've just seen this language. I've seen some press releases from the city, and so I don't know if it's just another one of their mantras or whatever, but the Build Back Better tour, which is the DNC, Democratic National Convention, is doing a tour of the U.S., and honestly, I looked around. I didn't see any promotion of this. I doubt there's really anybody there. I hope they'll show us pictures and see of the crowd. But the mayor was there, and look, it looks like there's nobody there as far as I can tell, but this Build Back Better bus is touring the U.S.
Who's that, Hidalgo? No, it's not. No,
just other, it's like they have local politicians like the mayor who are, for the Democratic Party, but I just wanted to bring this up. Obviously, the mayor, even though in Houston, technically there are no parties on the local level, it's clear the mayor is a Democrat who was endorsed by Obama during the campaigns. He supports Biden, and I thought it was worth mentioning because, among other things, this just shows sort of an example of like the mayor is clearly participating in this larger agenda from the DNC, which it's not about the Democrats versus Republicans. They're both, corrupt, but he's still a part of that same system. I think it's worth mentioning. The article's talking about Afghanistan or something. To me, it's just worth mentioning that, look, the mayor's getting together to shill for Biden in Houston at some event to promote vaccines and promote the economy, et cetera, et cetera.
And what we talked about, I saw fly by. What we talked about, day zero, coronavirus stimulus recovery packages, and it went by to the tune of $1.2 trillion in that article. Just in your zipping by, it's got to be mentioned in everything because that's the solution, right? That's the savior, right? And the other thing is, I do think in some of those photos, like where it showed them coming around the front of the bus, if there had been people there, they wouldn't have missed the photo opportunity to show crowds of people like in mass, like hailing. And
it didn't look like anybody was there.
Another thing I want to just mention is your work with him on the whole 5G issue and like how interesting it is.
He's a champion and stuff.
Well, no, because the Build Back Better, it's kind of tied into the Great Reset era thing, and 5G and smart cities are a big part of that. So it is interesting that like he's getting that national recognition from the president. Of course, Houston's one of the biggest cities in America, so he's definitely on board with that line of thinking. Let's smarten up our cities. We're gonna be the first ones with smart cars and all that kind of stuff. Like hypothetically, and that goes hand in hand. So we'll see how he goes with the whole Green New Deals and those kinds of things that go along with it. It'll be interesting to see how much he supports that and how much recognition he gets from these bigger politicians on the national stage.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Johnny, because you're right. He supports 5G, smart cities. Like, it's all part of this Great Reset, bigger agenda. Same language, same, it's clear as day. And that's just like the Great Reset is really the new terminology for what people previously, what is known as Agenda 2030, Sustainable Development Growth, United Nations. People have been talking about this for a while. This is just sort of the new branding, right? But the point is that this is a good example of how that stuff ripples down from United Nations top level down to the national level. And then you end up with mayors like him bringing it in on the local level.
And we see the same stuff from like Chicago, New York, LA.
They want to run for Senate, and it's a power deal, right? You got to go where the trough is. I mean, maybe I'm just talking smack. These are the ideas that come to my head, though. And after all these years of seeing police chiefs and mayors and stuff that go on and keep, it's a stepping stone for a lot of them. That's why it was odd to see the last one go to Miami. But, sometimes things don't go according to plan, I guess, and you end up not running for like House or something afterwards. So I don't know. I think, you brought up Lena Hidalgo. I don't know if that was her or not in the picture, but one of the stories we'll get into later concerns her. But she's been doing a lot in Houston, and a lot of people all across the country have been doing a lot. And so what I'm getting to is they're kind of revealing their stance on a lot of things. And who's going to argue with building back better? You know, I mean, it's
always also, Mike, I think you're right that this is just a stepping stone for them, right? Lena Hidalgo's young. She's definitely going somewhere like to a higher judge position where she'll have more power, or, you know, because Harris County judges aren't actually judges in that sense.
Yeah, this isn't a district judge.
But,
she will
go on to some higher political office because she's young enough to. The mayor, he ran for mayor 3 times to get to this point. He might still run for some other Senate or some, you know, they might have plans for him, but he clearly is at least, you know, eating at the same trough. And that's just going to segue right into our next story because it just keeps giving you more examples of why this mayor is not the best guy out there, I think is the nicest thing I could say for the moment. You guys remember when I ran for mayor in 2019 and before that, Micah, myself, Johnny, plenty of other people have talked about how the mayor of Houston, not so just Sylvester Turner, but the position itself is essentially a dictatorship. The two strongest mayor positions in the United States are Denver and Houston, and they have what's known as the strong mayor format, but on their level, it's kind of like even more strong than some other cities. And the city of Houston, the mayor gets to set the agenda for the city council. So every week when city council meets, they are discussing budget items, they're discussing proposals, all kinds of different things. And if you as a citizen, you're concerned about any issue, what's in the water, what's in the food, why are they killing cops, whatever it may be, I mean, why are the cops killing people, whatever it may be, you would assume, oh, I can go to my city council or go to the mayor and tell them about my problems. And maybe if we get enough people, they'll do something about it. But we've found out in Houston over the last 10 years that no matter how hard you fight, if the mayor, whoever that mayor is, says no, that issue, even if there's thousands of people, even if there's petitions with 10,000 plus, 100,000 plus signatures, as with the food ban that banned feeding people more than 5 people at a time, the homeless food ban. If you have a mayor as strong as him, basically nothing can get done. And it just basically takes away the people's power, whatever supposed power is supposed to have.
And we have 2.3 million people in Houston. That's the population now. 2.3 million in one.
And let's remember that, like, Derek and Mike and I have been to these city council meetings here. We've talked about fluoride. I think we even went to talk about this specific issue years ago, how the mayor is so powerful and trying to get more power into the hands of the council members who are much easier to reach. During these city council meetings, the mayor doesn't even have to show up or sit there and listen to your ideas. You know, he can just walk out. Some of them just, like, come and go, right? Like during the city council meetings, as the citizens are going in and trying to, like, express what they're saying, they may or may not be there. They might be talking to each other while you're talking, and it's kind of like, I don't know, it just yeah, there you go. And
it's frustrating.
Yeah, it's very frustrating,
to say the yeah least. so to the point that Johnny's making, that's been going on for pretty much forever in Houston. And the only way that that could change is either if one, the mayor says, hey, I want to change this, let's do this, or citizens come together, they do petition drives, and they attempt to get even this, like, hey, we want a petition to get a change to make it easier to make changes. But again, this decision comes down to the mayor. And that is a situation that we have been in. There were thousands and thousands of signatures, and I want to congratulate the groups behind this. Different organizations in Houston got together to make this change. Petitioners, council members say Turner is playing games to stall charter amendments. This was almost 2 weeks ago, so I'll show you the kind of brief saga. Mayor Turner was being asked to set this charter amendment change for referendum, which would mean, if successful, the next election, which would be the next one, soonest one, they would have to schedule a special election for November of this year. They got enough signatures. They brought it to city council. It was all certified. But basically, the mayor starts dragging his feet and saying that, well, even if they have enough signatures, that it probably wouldn't happen until November 2023, which is the next mayoral election, when he has like 1 month left. So he clearly doesn't want it to happen while he's, you know, in that position. But legally, he can't do anything about it. It says the organizers of the charter amendment decried the agenda item as gamesmanship meant to delay the election, and said the city is ignoring its responsibility to act promptly on the matter. And Charles Blaine, president of conservative advocacy group Urban Reform, helped collect signatures to get the proposal set. The mayor was flat out dishonest when he said he would leave the matter to council. And he just points out how the mayor, like, played some games with getting the vote, right? That's kind of where it's at. That was 2 weeks ago. Now here we are just this past week, and they actually did succeed. They had enough signatures. It's certified. But the mayor made the city council vote, and the city council vote whether or not basically an amendment got put forward by one of the city council members saying, hey, let's do this as soon as possible. Let's hold this vote this November. And one person, only two people voted for it, including Michael Kubosh. Everybody else voted against it. So the mayor's choice won, and now it will happen, but not till November 2023. Houston sets charter amendment election for 2023 over objections of petition organizers. So again, just the mayor just dragging his feet the whole way. I'll just quote one more person, then I'll get your guys' thoughts. Because some of the city council members, they were pissed off too. Houston city council member furious after mayor delays referendum for more than 2 years, and they talk with Houston council member Michael Kubosh. And it's interesting, you know, there's all this discussion about voter suppression back and forth between the Republicans and the Democrats. Well, Kubosh said, "Look, you're doing voter suppression. Tens of thousands of people signed the signature, got signatures, and said they support this idea, and now you are saying it's not going to happen for 2 more years." That's denying the will of the voters. And I think that's a fair argument to make. What do you guys think about that whole thing and just the whole situation?
I mean, it's obviously just, I mean, it speaks for itself in a lot of ways. Like, I mean, I'll let you know when I feel like not giving up my power. Then what a slap in the face to put it 1 month before he's out. I mean, like, really? Like, are we all that dumb that's like, I don't even know. I don't have much to say. I think it speaks for itself.
Yeah, and I think Turner kind of spoke for it too when, like, the quote you read, at least, where it said, if they even have the votes. Like, he's negative to it from the get-go. Why would it be bad? I mean, doesn't he want the best for Houston?
But he knows what's best for Houston. He doesn't need to be.
They would just be pesky.
I'm the mayor. I'm the mayor.
I am Houston.
Yeah, man, it's a sad situation, but it really is frustrating. I mean, just let's be real for a second, right? Like you said, Johnny, we've been going there.
What about democracy? I thought he was just standing in front of a bus with the word Democrat, meaning something about democracy.
That's Build Back Better.
That's
apparently
not what that means, dude.
Oh, that's after he's not the mayor, we can make it better. Is that what that meant?
Build Back Better means you own nothing and you'll be happy.
In 2023. Great.
And in 2023, you get a voice. It's just crazy, man. All right, well, I just wanted to emphasize that because, again, just on to the point of Build Back Better and the connection to 5G and the smart cities and the whole thing, wherever you're at, even if you're not in Houston, even if you're like, okay, guys, I don't know who this guy is, it's another corrupt politician, that is true, but it's much more than just corrupt politicians. It's important to see how that seed is planted from up on high, from big institutions or even non-governmental institutions, nonprofits, et cetera. And it works its way down to your local area. And then you got a mayor who's being endorsed by Obama. He's promoting Build Back Better. And he is saying, hey, you can't have a voice for 2 more years. I mean, it's not just Houston.
Well, he's got his superpowers. So that makes him special. 5G champion.
5G champion, special powers. All right, well, let's go ahead. Let's jump into our COVID section. We're going to start with some Harris County, Houston COVID news. Michael, you were talking about Lena Hidalgo a moment ago. Why don't you go ahead and take off with this story? I mean, it's just the saga continues between the state and the city.
I already know it.
Yeah, and that's all I was going to say about it. And, you know, most of us know this already, but it's another example of these, you know, these people. I mean, we're talking about commissioner's court here, right? You know, we're not, like you pointed out earlier, we're not talking about, you know, a court like civil court in that way, or court like criminal court. We're talking about commissioner's court that makes decisions for the county type thing. But yeah, it turns out, and they try to say that 4.7 million, you know, live in Houston. Other places say 2 point something. It's hard to know. Oh, this is Harris County. But yeah, so it turns out, yikes. It turns out that they are going to give permission for the county's attorneys to basically sue, which, you know, we've been seeing it all through the feed, so I'm kind of tired of it as well. But I think one of the things that's interesting about it is who gets to say that we can make a big deal about it, you know? And it's interesting to see this position coming out and having this sort of power. And I think that's the main takeaway I wanted to just spend a moment on, is that through this, we have seen quite a few individuals throughout politics standing up and doing different things that we may not see them doing otherwise. Normally, commissioner's court makes decisions on what to do about, like, buildings that the county has and stuff like that. And now we're seeing them make decisions like, oh, you will wear a mask and all these sort of things. And we've talked about masks forever on that, but it's just weird to see, you know, that occur, and then to see the political war over this in our state.
I was going to say, dude, it's been a mess in Texas. I'm sure in other states with, like, you know, we're, like, probably in Florida. I don't know which other states have gone, like, kind of, like, on the state level against the mask mandates. But, you know, we're seeing counties all over the place trying to, like, well, some counties are trying to, like, fight against it, and some counties are cool with it. And then there'll be, like, a even smaller local government that's not okay, or, like, a school board that's, like, overturning it. And so it's just, like, it really does feel like a mess while Biden's trying to, like, force it in for the federal employees. So it's, like, we're in a situation where it's, like, well, if you work at the post office, you have to do this. But since you're at the school, you got to do that. And then, you know, if you go in the bar or restaurant at this, like, state, you got to do this and that. And, like, you know, I mean, it's kind of – there's no uniformity in it. And, like, everyone's saying trust the science and trust, you know, and it's just – it seems like the science isn't settled. I don't know. Like, there's so much debate over it. And every governor and every mayor and every in like, this – the national level people, they all have their own opinions on it, and they all have their own wills, and they're all forcing it in through executive orders. And it's like the people are totally being cut out of this entire situation. And quite frankly, it's confusing and annoying.
You may have a voice after COVID.
Yeah, as soon as there's zero cases, you can have your voice back.
Yeah. I just want to add to what you were saying, Johnny, that I think this one's been so weird for me, right? Because you have the local government saying F you to the state, to a bigger government, right? But about something that I don't agree with, you know, at all about the way they're going about this city and county. But it is an example of decentralization, right? It's like not, it's still somebody else, a mayor speaking for all the people of Houston. I mean, it's still dictatorship and Lena Hidalgo, et cetera. But it's like, oh, they called it, like last week, they called it necessary civil disobedience, fighting against the governor because they're standing up for the people. And it's just so weird how this whole thing is framed. But on one hand, I'm like, okay, in principle, sure, I support a local body if it was really reflective of the people's will, right? Like, if everybody got a chance to vote and say, hey, do you guys want to wear a mask and go against the governor's mandate? Or do y'all want to listen, you know, whatever, if there was some way to poll the people.
That's
and
not what's happening.
But it's not what's happening. Yeah, exactly. So it's not really that, but it's just such a weird thing. Ultimately, it just seems like drama between back and forth. And I was saying this to people that, like, for the moment, the Texas Supreme Court has ruled that Abbott's thing can stand. You know, it's like going to hold, but there's going to be lawsuits now. It's going to go on. It's not going to, I don't know. I just think that it's not going to ultimately stop everything that is happening.
We'll see who cares about this thing that they pretend to be part of. You know, the law.
Yeah, who does, right? I'm going to jump to the next story because I think it relates to this, because we're talking about COVID measures in Houston, Harris County, vax mandates, mask mandates. This is something we're seeing all over the world now. And one of the biggest companies, especially as to Mick, has announced that Live Nation and AEG will require COVID-19 vax card or test at Houston venues and shows. We've come to the conclusion that as the market leader, it was up to us to take a real stand on this issue. It's up to, you know, take a big stand. And that's pretty much the gist of it. Live Nation and AEG, entertainment companies responsible for touring shows that come through Houston, will require everyone attending or working shows or festivals to provide proof of COVID or a negative COVID test. Both firms announced this week. And inside Houston, this includes House of Blues, Bayou Music Center, 713 Music Hall, AEG is some other venues. You know, of course, this is the big guys, though, right? These are going to be all the big tours. But I know you guys both know local shows that aren't going to be asking people for stuff, right?
And the fact is, that's true. But also, it's not going to be all the big tours. It's going to be a hell of a lot of them, though. And you know, I'd like to figure out what we could do to make these people not so afraid. Let's just get past this. I'm so sick of all the divide. I mean, I feel sorry for friends of mine that kind of are hardliners on either side, and I'm tired of seeing it. But yeah, you're right about it. It goes on. You're not going to stop rock and roll. People are going to come up this Friday. People are on tour at, Kickback Bar over on the east side on Harrisburg. Yeah, Ganesh is going to be there, and Smokey Mirrors in from Denver, so they're down from Colorado, Smokey Mirrors, you know?
I mean, dude, I got a weird take on this, because, like, it's bothering me a lot, because, first of all, if these people really cared about what they say they care about, first of all, the discussion's always like, you know, well, if you don't want to get the vaccine, you can always get the test. And there's problems with both sides of this at the end of the day, because First of all, the test is incredibly inaccurate. You can watch this guy's documentary, The PCR Deception, to find out, you know, even from what's the guy's name who invented it? Millis? Yeah, I mean, he even spoke for it himself. It's pretty inaccurate, or it's being misused or misunderstood of how it's being used. So the PCR test can have high false positive rates. So maybe you can't go to the show. You're hurting your sales. You're stopping people from going to the show when they might not be symptomatic. They might not actually be able to affect other people. Now, on the other hand, you're also inviting people in who have their little papers, their gold star vaccine cards, to get into the doors, which is already annoying for HIPAA reasons and other things. Like, you're trying to look into people's medical records to go to a freaking show. But not only that, we're well aware that you can still transmit the disease while you're vaccinated. So wouldn't that, under their own argument, be promoting people to go and transmit the disease? Like, I don't understand why they say it makes them safe. Like, what are you talking about? And we already know that there's vaccine shedding and things like this, which sound like crazy ideas, but if you guys think it's crazy, I encourage you to, you know, do some research and look into it. But I mean, you know, hypothetically, this literally does nothing. But PCR tests are stopping people from going to shows who could go to shows. And the vaccines are allowing people who can actually infect others to go to the shows and feel like they're safe and feel like they're not going to infect others when we're seeing breakthrough infections and stuff like this. Now the narrative is essentially like, well, you just won't end up in the hospital. But I don't see why that's like acceptable either way. Like, basically, it's the same thing as always. If you're coughing and you're sick, stay home. Just like we've always done our entire lives. Like, you don't go to the show with the freaking flu. You don't go to the show when you have contagious diseases. That's always been common sense. But now all of a sudden we're pretending like this is like some kind of end-all be-all that stops transmission when everybody knows it doesn't. It just makes you, it's like a comfort blanket. And it makes me sad that all these people are rolling over and just not even using any kind of critical thought on it.
I understand, and I'm frustrated about it in a lot of ways. And one of the aspects you brought up was the inconsistency when you first started speaking, the inconsistency of the view, and they're not holding up a stance. I've also been seeing just in the emotion that's coming behind it. You know how we see Americans, or the people, we should say, for a better word, just divided over anything? This thing's become a thing to divide people over. They yell at people whether they have a mask or not. I've seen people, you get what I'm saying? And I've even seen people who act like they care about the welfare of people talking about how great it is that Abbott has caught COVID. You know, and I don't care about him as a human. I know you guys, I don't know him. You get what I'm saying? But I'm seeing people that always walk around, you know, love and light, and care about people. And that's one of the reasons you should get vaccinated and be masked around, you know, people at risk and all this sort of thing. And that's an important argument we ought to at least entertain. But this whole, I care about people, that's why I'm putting forth this argument to, I hope he gets it and dies. Because
yeah, I hope you die.
Forcing people to wear a mask. He didn't force people that were infected to go anywhere. Just because you didn't have to wear a mask didn't mean you didn't wear a mask. You get what I'm saying here? I mean, it's acting like free people won't, as a majority, be responsible at all. So I'm sick of the divide and the flip-flops.
And it's treating, I'm also tired of treating every person like they're sick. That's what's been driving me nuts. Like, they're like, everybody is starting to just be like treating everybody like you're just a bag of virus. Any other person is just a freaking germ or something. And it's just so strange to me. Like, I mean, I've just like, never have we like in the history been so scared of people who are clearly healthy, who are not coughing, who are not sneezing, who don't have, you know, boogers running out of their nose. And they're not wiping their face and rubbing it on you. I mean, like, this is how diseases are spread. And like, the asymptomatic transfer, it's been somewhat debunked by several things, including the WHO, like, ended up backtracking on it a little bit. But that was after, you know, people got upset when they said that asymptomatic transfer. There's that Chinese study of 6 million people that shows there wasn't significant transfer of asymptomatic cases. But like, I mean, It's definitely affecting the shows, but the underground scene in Houston is thriving at least. I've had hundreds of people at my house over the past months. People who want to wear masks are wearing masks. People who don't want to wear masks are not wearing masks. People who wanted to get the vaccine got the vaccine. People who didn't want to get the vaccine didn't get the vaccine. We've had zero cases come from our house, and we've been paying attention. I've heard of one case from another venue that happened, and it didn't spread to anyone else. It was a positive PCR test. So, I mean, I'm just – the super spreader theory is just – it's not panning out for what I've seen, you know?
Yeah, I think that you guys made a lot of good points there. I'll just add, we've got a couple comments here. Ginger was saying Abbott is about personal freedom, and I just wanted to remind her and all the listeners, he's about personal freedom right now while it serves him, and he's up for re-election, and he's trying to remind everybody how great he is, and when he's seen as a potential contender for 2024. So I don't know if he should be trusted beyond that at the moment. I think that it is unfortunate this has become so divisive. I see some people on DLive talking about, even just in the community, Johnny's sitting here talking about the problems with PCR, and people are like, but there's no virus, Johnny. There's no virus, and just getting stuck in these different things. And, I want to say a couple of points.
We're arguing from their narrative.
I'm in Mexico, right? And one of the things that they have censored, that they continue to censor, is ivermectin. And we haven't really got much into that in the show. We're not going to at the moment, but it is one of those other medications that people have been treating themselves prior to getting COVID, in the anticipation that they might be sick, and once they get sick with something. Again, the PCR test can't be trusted, but I know people who have gotten sick with something that is not just the normal flu that they typically experience, something a little bit rougher for some people, and they use ivermectin. And when doctors, medical doctors, not me just talking on the internet, but medical doctors put videos out talking about ivermectin, they get censored. It gets taken down and act as if this is not, there's nothing there, right? So people sit here and want to argue and oh my God, they're talking about a virus that doesn't exist. But I think there are actually more clear things that are being hidden. I'm not saying that we shouldn't question the isolation, purification of whatever COVID is, but at the same time, we clearly have evidence that they're censoring a treatment that is being used by some doctors to treat people because they only want us to push the vaccine. They only want, they don't want you to talk about. The reason I say I'm in Mexico, though, is because out here in Mexico, you can get it over the counter, like pretty easily and readily available, like a lot of other things that aren't available in some countries. And so hit me up. No. I just want to say that we do have realistic things that are concerning about the vaccine, them covering up treatments like vitamin C, vitamin D, zinc, ivermectin, and just acting like the only thing is the vaccine. That's all there is. So if you don't get it, then you can't go anywhere. You can't, and clearly we disagree with that. I want to go to a music break, but before that, I do want to show you guys just a brief clip of somebody who is more credentialed than the three of us on here. I'm not saying we agree with everything he'd say, but his name is Dr. Marty McCary. I interviewed him on Monday. He's from Johns Hopkins University. Yes, the same university that has some involvement in Event 201. So some people are like, he can't be trusted. And again, I don't agree with everything he said to me in this interview, but he is a mainstream doctor writing for the Wall Street Journal periodically. And he's written two pieces that we've covered on the show. One saying that there's no evidence for masking kids. There's no good reason to do that. And it's dangerous. And that there's no good evidence to really push or mandate the vaccine on kids. He does believe that parents, if they want to, could give the kids one dose. I don't agree with that. But so he says some things. And before I play the clip, I just want to, again, like the audience, people hear things like that. And because it doesn't all agree with everything they believe, they're like, oh, I tuned the guy out after he said that. I couldn't listen anymore. It's like, well, if you tuned him out after that, then you missed this good clip that I'm about to play. It's just 2 minutes long. But this little 2 minute section, he says some good things that I think most of our audience would agree with. But there are people who are these purists or whatever that like, oh, this doctor didn't say exactly what he should say. Maybe he's not all the way awake as some of us are. Or maybe this is just, we disagree. I don't know. But the point is, I interviewed him because he says things that I think, quote unquote, normies, our friends and family who aren't already in this community kind of, questioning things, would hear this doctor and be like, oh my God, that doctor just said masks aren't good for kids. That doctor just said et cetera, et cetera. So he said some good things, and I'm going to play this clip now because what he says here is something everybody needs to hear. He specifically addresses what Johnny was just talking about, vaccinated versus unvaccinated. And are the people who haven't been vaccinated, do we pose a threat to the unvaccinated? Let's find out, according to Dr. Marty McCary of Johns Hopkins University. I'm going to play this, and then we'll comment on it before we play some music. Check this out.
And your thoughts on that for the general population? Do you support, for example, the conversation, as I'm sure you're aware of, is lately vaccine passports mandates of that sort we're seeing in New York City, San Francisco, New Orleans, LA. What are your thoughts on that? Do you support those type of measures?
Well, I actually, when our businesses were all shuttered, and mostly in the northern United States, I actually wrote a piece in the Washington Post saying, hey, requiring proof of immunity, that is, you already have immunity from a positive COVID test or an antibody test or a vaccine, even if it's one dose, requiring someone to show that immunity and giving them added privileges in society when everyone else was shuttered, that is, letting the restaurants be open when they were closed to those who had immunity, to me, was a reasonable strategy early on. But what it's turned into has been this idea of blocking people out for not having immunity. And right now, we've got very high population immunity. The unvaccinated pose no serious public health threat to the vaccinated beyond that of a common cold. And they've been demonized. And it's hurting our messaging in trying to encourage them to get vaccinated right now. And mandating some of these things like, you know, vaccine mandates and employment mandates, college mandates for kids to get both doses of the vaccine. It's polarizing people. It's hurting our cause. I believe as a physician that, you know, we have a lot of experience taking care of people who don't want to do things we ask them to do. You win more bees with honey than fire. If you can be positive and encourage people, share testimonials. That's what they're watching right now. They're watching on TV, local hospitals overrun. They're hearing from their friend that one of their loved ones was on a respirator, and it's driving people right now to show up and get a vaccine dose. That's how you're most effective. Not, if the politicians never said anything about vaccines, we'd probably be in a better place. People would listen more to their local physicians. So I think a heavy hand sometimes can be counterproductive.
Yeah, so again, I don't necessarily agree with everything he just said there, but what do you guys think about that? Particularly, you know, you heard him, the unvaccinated pose no public health threat to the vaccinated.
That sentence just needs to be clipped and like quote and you know, quoted all over the place because it's ridiculous. You know, if they can hold up every doctor that they want to because it goes this or that way, if we got to just believe in someone because of their credentials, then hit them over the head with this doctor. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I think it's important that people that do different jobs think about the job they're doing. So, you know, no matter, you know, whether you think he's more awake or less awake, it sounds like he's trying to call the truth as he sees it from his point at this time. And, you know, he's right about the divide. That's something we were talking about earlier. Just so frustrating. And to see, I know we're all easily divided over everything they want to push a button on, but now there's this new one that seems so invasive, you know? And so I'm glad that he's speaking up. And he also seemed fairly anti-authoritarian to some degree. He's saying, like, you know, use persuasion, not the heavy hand. Let people hear testimonials. Let them hear and see and know the truth, more or less, even though he didn't use that word, you know? He's like, you know, if the politicians would shut up, people might just, even though he was going to the point that they might go get vaccinated, that may be true. If we are left to just decide for ourselves instead of everybody telling us what to do and what not to do, you know, but that's what they're scared of, you know, that's what they're scared of free people deciding for themselves. So that guy, he seemed like a pretty legit guy. I'm sure I don't agree with everything.
Yeah, I thought it was a kind of refreshing take just to hear somebody, because you can kind of see that, you know, that was, I guess, his truth in the matter. And he was more coming from just like what feels like a reasonable thing, because all we hear is narrative nowadays. All we hear is safe and effective, get the shot, you know, and we constantly see them moving the goalpost of herd immunity. And that's also really frustrating, you know, like to hear that, like, well, we just, if we can get this percentage or that percentage. But it seems like he's, you know, he realizes that there's going to be people who don't want this, and there's going to be people who do want this, and coercion, or side of the life, messed up that word, coercion is not really the way to go. So, I mean, I do agree with him there, and I think there's a lot of doctors that feel the same way. Of course doctors are going to be like, sure, get a vaccine. It's a medical treatment that, you know, they do. You know, we don't necessarily believe in that, but, like, I mean, the fact that he's not trying to, you know, shove it down our throat, and he isn't just, you know, saying what feels like a script it's kind of nice just because that's so many doctors that get paraded on the mainstream media. That's what they do. They just read off the script. They know what they're supposed to say. And that was a little different. It felt like genuine.
Plus, who wants to lose all faith in doctors and science just because of like a few tyrannical maniacs? You know, evil doctors and evil scientists don't make them good people. Their plans good, right? Just because now they're doctors and scientists. No, we need good doctors and good scientists with plans and ideas that they can demonstrate to all of us. You know, that's how we got all these cool things to play with, because it's all demonstrable. We can understand how to plug things in and how to turn the lights on and such. So I think he had the right approach, that it's got to be about persuasion and understanding, because as human beings, if there is something going around, we ought to know to wash our hands or to do whatever to be safe, right? I mean,
yeah. Well, if anybody wants to see the rest of that interview with Dr. Marty McCary, it's at theconsciousresistance.com. You can listen there and check it out. We're going to hit a quick song, play some El Jumbotron. And after that, Johnny has a study he's going to share about COVID and messaging, sort of continuing on the conversation we were just having here. We're going to hit a couple economic stories. We're going to talk a little bit about weather engineering. In case you didn't know, they can manipulate the weather. And then we'll wrap up with actually some positive news in the 5G arena. So stay tuned, guys. We'll be right back. This is Freethinker Radio. You're going to listen to El Jumbotron.
Here's a short story about a dying hollow.
Welcome back. That was Johnny on bass and some friends. We call it Jumbotron.
Hey, old Jumbotron. Mike is off doing some weird crap.
We're looking at Micah's couch here. Let's just, so everybody's who's watching, we're just
going to show. That's where Micah. The magic happens.
I was trying to show your bed, Micah. All right, we're back on.
Micah's cribs.
Micah is muted for the moment.
You know, yeah, I didn't even hear what was going on, too. But no, that's where the magic happens. All are great. No, this is the extra room. Other people's
all right.
Happen here.
Well, let's jump back into it, guys. We got
El Jumbotron, though. Music goes on. Yes, I'm so glad we did share it. Sorry, I had to say something. Where all are we broadcasting?
We're broadcasting on Float. We're broadcasting on DLive. We are still on Facebook for people who watch on Facebook. And this will be uploaded to Odyssey, BitChute, Hive, Minds, and Rockfin. And we get comments and support on all those channels. So shout out to everybody who's watching this after the fact.
And somewhere on KPFT, wherever they choose to put us, I'm feeling positive about KPFT. We have a whole new team of people taking it on after all this chaos we've been through. I think that, you know, it was horrible, like pulling a splinter or something, right? Pulling a piece of glass out of your eye. And now somebody's decided to come in and take that on. So, you know,
I think we'll be back in the studio and back on FM before we know it.
Yeah.
We love you, KPFT.
Everybody throwing these comments down and sharing, liking, thumbs up means the world to us because we know we're reaching a lot of people both in the radio show and beyond the radio show. And we actually, I don't know if we should go there, Derek, but I do think we should let them know. But yeah, I will say we would receive a good amount of love letters at the station, for lack of a better word.
You're getting love letters?
Yeah, so your support still means the world to us. Yeah, you know, I guess they don't like having people that are
willing. I never got a love letter. Let me make that clear.
Okay, it wasn't a love letter. I just didn't want to say you got a hate letter.
I've been sending the love
letters. I got hate mail, but no love letters.
We do get some haters posting things sometimes because, you know, it feels like no matter where you go, if you actually speak about what's going on, you're going to get some haters. And
shout out to Tori.
Haters make us famous. Remember that.
Exactly. But the best way to avoid them is to do nothing and be nothing. And that's not going to happen. So this is what you get.
Haters going to hate. Staters going to state.
Well, I'm going to go ahead, Johnny. I'm going to go ahead and pass it to you, Johnny. We were just covering some COVID news. I know as we wrap up our COVID section and Mike is going to move to the economy in a moment. I'm going to pass it to you to talk about this study.
Sweet. You got it pulled up, buddy. So, this is the study I found. Someone actually threw this at me when I was like wasting my time arguing in the comment section on Facebook. And I thought it was interesting. I was like, okay, I'll read this. And it's from the NEMA group, or their NEMA services, research services, which is like a coalition of physicians and drug making companies. And they put out research papers. This one's called Fact Versus Fallacy, the Anti-Vaccine Discussion Reloaded. And essentially, these people have an extremely detailed study here, kind of going over all of the talking points that are, you know, going to be against vaccines, whether legitimate or not. And I thought it was just kind of interesting to see how deep these people have studied in it. And they're really trying to find pressure points of how to persuade effectively people into getting a vaccine. So it's important to see that like other people are reading this kind of stuff. So I'll go into the abstract and then I'm going to just kind of go hit these headlines along the way and read like a sentence or so from them. And you guys can kind of see what's going on here. So the abstract says, in the light of the COVID-19 pandemic, anti-vaccine sentiments have been on the rise. With a recent seminal study on the development of anti-vaccine views in social media, even making its way into Nature Communications. Yet, with the current scientific consensus being in overwhelming agreement over the safety and efficacy of vaccines, many scientists lose their grasp on the fears, concerns, and arguments that the opposition may hold. This paper discusses and evaluates vaccine-hesitant individuals on a socioeconomic, historical, and philosophical landscape. It also provides an analysis of common argumentative patterns and the psychological impact that these arguments may have on undecided individuals. The discussion also explores why anti-vaccine sentiments are on the rise and how members of the scientific and medical community require a more structured approach to communicating key arguments. This is particularly important if vaccination rates and herd immunity are to be sustained. No longer is it sufficient to win arguments based on a factual and scientific basis, but rather scientists and medical practitioners have to focus on conveying confidence and reassurance on both an informative and emotional level to those with doubts and fears. So, you know, people are really getting into this, like, how to, like, pick apart our brains. I'm not going to go through the introduction, but we can hit this stuff. I'm just going to read like a sentence out of like each one of them. So first they have, you know, an overview of the history of modern anti-vax movement. So safety concerns about vaccines have been around as long as there have been vaccines. And many of those issues were valid and have led to corrective actions, but there are also currently still largely unfounded assertions from all over the world. Vaccines associated with autism spectrum disorder, neurological disorders, vaccines contain harmful ingredients such as Thermosil. So these are things that a lot of our audience might be familiar with, you know, and it's, I just think it's funny because like throughout this entire paper, you constantly hear them basically admit like there's some merit to this argument. And it's like, it's kind of like, but here's why, you know, like it's BS essentially. So, I mean, but people, you know, they're kind of trying to move around like the legitimate concerns and like finding arguments against it. So they go into the history of it. Obviously, there's been tons of problems with vaccines, the swine flu vaccine, the Tuskegee experiments and such things like that that cause vaccine hesitancy. There's also the role of post hoc ergo propter hoc. So I'm not really sure on like the
after the fact. It's after the fact, therefore because of the fact.
Okay, so Mike is smart. He's got that. Yeah, and that's basically exactly what it says. So it's kind of like saying it's literally translated to after this, therefore this, because of this. False correlations can lead to arguments that can be propagated as fact through anti-vaccine blogs, social media page, and even news outlets. A common example of this is in the anti-vaccine community is the controversial link between autism, measles, and mumps, vaccine by convention. They're basically saying because there's a rise of in autism, it must be the vaccine, which is something that this audience should be very careful of. Correlation isn't necessarily causation. So like it's something to be pointed at, but not necessarily solid evidence. The next section here, the role of bias. There's several types of biases that can affect judgment. There are biases of omission, believing that something is a lack of paucity or evidence. Confirmation bias, favoring arguments in one's pre-established position, or false or imagined correlations between the availability, which gives undue weight to certain events at the expense of others, and cognitive dissonance, which is perceived conflicting evidence, which may lead to one to resolve an internal conflict by selecting an incorrect but seemingly less dangerous solution. So, you know, parental vaccine hesitancy has been correlated with information avoidance, omission bias. They're basically saying, you know, like, because you want to be natural, you're more prone to natural medicines, therefore you distrust these kinds of things. Or, you know, really biases, everybody has their own personal biases, and they have theirs as well. The role of mistrust, and I thought this one was particularly interesting. We could get into this one a little bit more, but it's kind of gives credence to, you know, the big pharma discussion of like, you know, maybe the fact that Pfizer has like what billions of dollars in fines for vaccine for medical misinformation, or, you know, they get people hooked on drugs. It says, oops, sorry, lost my spot. Yeah, here it is. Okay. So mistrust of modern medicine, quote, big pharma and government institutions is another source of vaccine hesitancy. The ongoing COVID-19 pandemic itself has generated conspiracy theories about the origin of the virus, which we now have seen more information come out about that, the nature of the illness and objectives of a possible vaccine. Conspiracy theories may defined as the belief that multiple, you guys know what conspiracy theories are. But it says here, obviously, this one, I don't know very many people that make this claim, and it does drive me crazy that everyone points to this. Among recent anti-vax conspiracy theories are beliefs that Bill Gates may be using the SARS-CoV-2 vaccination to microchip the population, or that the Gates Foundation is pursuing an agenda aimed at population control, which I feel like the second half of this, the population control aspect, might have a little bit more facts behind it. I don't know how many people really believe that there's microchips in the vaccines. I haven't seen any evidence for that, but people love to throw that out and make us crazy. But I think it's interesting they point out here, the mistrust of pharmaceutical companies is not entirely unfounded. Gee, you think? Given the price-driving efforts of drug companies in the USA and recent findings about how oxycodone was marketed to vulnerable populations and led to the opioid crisis. So basically pointing out that like these companies are essentially crooked, but here's why we should trust them now. You know, like, look how they're going to try to argue that these companies are you know.
Crooked drug dealers?
Yeah, it's exactly. And then straight up denialism, obviously. People who just deny what they say is facts, conspiracy theories, fake experts, selective consideration. And then going in there, next one is the role of social media. While the role of confirmation bias and vaccine hesitancy and anti-vax sentiment remains disputed, social media tends to artificially generate confirmation bias by its unilateral presentation of certain viewpoints. Such bias may extend beyond user-generated social media to mainstream and other news media outlets. Search engine algorithms and other editing algorithms tend to filter users' internet experiences on the bias of prior searches and interactions, which I also find kind of silly considering it goes both ways. You know, like, there is easily misinformation coming from the pro-vaccine side as well, that it just applies to the same thing. And obviously we've been dealing with all kinds of censorship, so that kind of thing is, it's just being, you know, drived in more and more. But I just found it really interesting. I think this study is really interesting. If you get a chance, you know, check it out, because the pro-vax community is going to be reading this and being like, see, there's studies and you guys are wrong for all these. They might even pull up the references where they can. But one final tidbit of information, and obviously read this if you guys want to hear the whole thing, it's quite long, is their disclosure. There's two people who actually work for Pfizer who participated in doing this, which is Joseph V. Paragolesi, and he's on the editorial board of Advances in Therapy, and to comply with the committee medical journal editors requirements, disclose the following relationships for his. He's got Salix and Claire, Skylix, Pfizer, Lilly, Teva, Regeneration, Red Hill, Gunthrall, Pneumonium, and this other guy here, sorry, they have so many things to disclose. Gustino Verassi, I'm butchering their names, but is a section editor, again, for Advances in Therapy. Further to comply with this, he discloses the following relationships. Consultant speaker researcher for Abbott, Dompe, Mariani, Moltini, Pfizer, and Shigoni. So, I mean, it's written by two Pfizer guys and some other people who are clearly tied to multiple big pharma things, but they're really getting technical, guys. So, you know, have your arguments on hand and be aware that people are going to be reading this kind of stuff.
That's if you, I hear you. And the whole time you're saying, like, okay, when I finish this, let's hear what you think about it. You know, so I was kind of like paying attention, you know what I mean? And, I do think parts that you said, you know, like, they got this overall general view of the opposition. They dug into some websites of diverse
conspiracy theorists,
dubious character, to come up with what you think and what he thinks and what I think and what the audience thinks. And somehow this is our reasoning. They know our reasoning by knowing what the loudmouth said. I don't know about you. I tend to doubt they know my reasoning. And I also don't know that I need to argue with them. Okay. I mean, I think that's kind of the point I'm tired of. I don't need to argue with them. This is a personal choice, their choice to be vaccinated. I don't have to tell them not to, or, you know, at which level the line is. Oh, you're compromised. You probably ought to get vaccinated. You know, I don't have to get in their lives like that. I'm not their doctor. I haven't been asked for my opinion in that matter. That's kind of my new stance on it. I'll talk about COVID like we have on this show. But anyway, so the point being, they don't know our reasoning, you know? So when they're jumping to conclusions saying that, you know, we have to deal with these people's emotions, like you got to this by some knee-jerk reaction and fear of a vaccine. I mean,
yeah, you couldn't possibly have come to these conclusions by doing research and, you know, informing yourself with a wide variety of, you know, opinions and views.
I mean, the weird thing is they admit like so much truth in there. They're like, I mean, while these have merit and like, this is like, there's legitimate claims here and there. Like, here's our claims against that. Basically, they're just like trying to arm people with science against that. But I mean, coming from someone who works for the vaccine companies themselves, like, it was just really interesting.
The one other thing I wanted to say about this is people who don't want to get vaccines, just like people who do want to get vaccines, some people didn't think about it. They just landed in that pile and they're there. Some are more entrenched than others and some wave a big flag. Okay. So yes, these arguments, no matter which side said, you could go and make one for this side that says the general idea of the pro-vax community is, and you could put it all out and show some fallacies with that straw man. Okay. And that's what they've kind of done here. They've created this opposition character. We don't know who it is. They just tell us who it is. You see what I'm saying? They don't present the argument and say the problem with Dr. So-and-so's argument about the sick not making the unvaccinated not making the vaccinated sick is this. They don't give us that. They give us this overview and just how to tear down unreasoned people's point of view. Great. So the unreasoned anti-vaxxers may be persuaded. And I don't even like that word anti-vaxxer. I feel like it's a hardliner position, but you get what I'm saying. Like, yeah, they'll persuade some people. Just thinking would persuade anybody. So I don't know. That's what I think about it. And then we got to get into economic.
Yeah, let's go ahead and jump out. Thank you guys for listening. This has been Freethinker Radio. We do this every Wednesday. You can find us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. Archives posted there, as well as on BitChute, Odyssey. And we do have a Spotify account if you want to find Freethinker Radio.
Yeah, find us there on Spotify. We're glitching all over.
Going on here.
All right, I'll get into these stories. The first one I want to cover is this: the USDA to permanently boost food stamp benefits. We could go into food stamp and talk about the role of government and all that, but what's the point? I just want the news on this. In October, the average benefits of food stamps, known as SNAP, will rise more than 25% over the pre-pandemic levels. No inflation here. The increased assistance will be available indefinitely to all 42 million SNAP benefits. That's almost 10 Houstons, right? Beneficiaries. The average monthly per person benefits will rise from $121 to $157. Okay. You know, maybe if we have less wars, we can afford these things, but that doesn't mean that isn't a proper role of government. I don't know. I'd rather help people that are hungry. But in the end, you have to remember this is mostly a bailout for the grocery stores, right? I mean, that's where all this money ends up, the grocery stores. And they do say that the difference between it is like people who are making or taking 121 in food stamps, they have to make choices that force them to sacrifice nutrition for budget. And I think we should be sympathetic to that, but I don't know that this is the best answer. But the only point of it here in the economic section is to talk about the 25% increase going out for all 42 million SNAP beneficiaries. That's a lot of millions every month. You know, that $36 there or whatever times 42 million. That's a lot of million every month now, more. So, yeah, there'll be more spending. The next thing I thought was kind of interesting, we talk about economics in diverse ways, but lately I've been getting into just what other companies are doing. Here we have one that gets into Palantir buying $50 million worth of gold bars. If y'all don't know about Palantir, they're like a data analysis software company. They obviously got money. They went and bought $50.7 million worth of gold bars. Due to economic uncertainty and anticipation of a black swan event. And, you know,
those unknown unknowns.
Mm-hmm. And so the cash pile has been growing due to the stock. So they're basically, you know, they got that stock boom and now they're like, okay, let's get that money and run. So they turn it into gold. And it turns out that also they are allowing people to buy their products in gold. So I thought that was kind of interesting as well. So just little things going on in the economic, but you know, there's nothing going on, you know, get that COVID stimulus out, get those SNAP benefits up. Things are, everything's fine. Go back to sleep. I mean, put your mask on or do something. Just do what we say. That's the main thing. Anyway.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And Mike, I just wanted to add to that Palantir story just because I think that that is probably more interesting than we might realize. I mean, we don't spend too much time on it, but Palantir is definitely, as you said, they're a data mining company, but they're also, they're associated with Peter Thiel. That's one of his companies, one of the co-founders of PayPal, who's associated with the Bilderberg Group. And they are a private security intelligence firm, essentially. And they're working on a lot of the nasty, scary things that are part of this kind of technocratic agenda. So interesting that they are buying up that much gold. And I think it probably is a move that people should pay attention to and whatever ways are important to them. I mean, cause that's pretty, I mean, I you would say, right. If they believe that that gold is valuable, then, and they believe that, I don't know. I just think that it's a big move.
It is a big move because, you know, they got it from stock sale and, you know, they have their core investment, which is obviously data technology, and they're deciding to park some of their assets in gold rather than in a dollar. So, you know, that says something about their faith in the dollar.
Yeah, so, that's what I was thinking about it. I mean, obviously, they're assuming it's going to be worth more later.
Yeah, they're assuming that it's safer or that it'll be worth more later, the gold than the dollar. Or else there's some reason for them to take a fall, which I can't imagine, you know, that. So are we rounding up? Are we going to go into some? I know
we got a couple. We got a couple more real quick. A couple more stories real quick. I just want to cover one. Can you guys see the NSA story?
Oh, yeah. That's up. That's up. Ninth Circuit deals third blow to NSA. It's fine case.
Okay, so this one is just a brief mention, I guess. We're what, a couple of weeks away from the 20th anniversary of 9/11, and I don't know, it's just an ongoing thing, right? This is just part of the fallout of 9/11. So people who say that they were unwittingly caught up in NSA's massive surveillance program that started after 9/11 in a large way can't pursue their claim whether the claims violated their constitutional rights. It's one of these kind of political legal conundrums, right? They're not supposed to know that they were being spied on, and the government won't admit that they were spying on them. And so they're saying, look, can you show us a piece of paper that includes these specific plaintiffs who are, you know, just generally suing, saying, hey, we know because of Snowden and other reports and other leaks that we have been spied on by the American people. But they're basically saying, can you show us a document that shows that? And since they can't, they're like, well, then we have no way to know if you've been spied on. And it's just this really stupid legal situation. 12-year legal saga brought by people who claim the government enacted a claim. I mean, we know that they enacted a massive domestic spying dragnet, culminated in yet another legal defeat. A 3-judge panel found a federal judge ruled correctly when he said the plaintiffs failed to provide sufficient evidence they were spied on by the NSA. And yeah, that's pretty much where it goes. And the EFF said that the ruling establishes standing, said that, quote, today's decision renders government mass surveillance programs essentially unreviewable by U.S. courts, since no individual will be able to prove with certainty the Ninth Circuit required that they were particularly spied upon. They said, quote, this hurdle is insurmountable, especially when such programs are shrouded in secrecy and the procedures for confronting that secrecy are disregarded by the courts. So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty strong words, but think about that. Like, if you can't prove specifically that you have been spied on, even though we know it's a massive surveillance program, and unless you can show us where you're on that domestic terror watch list or where you're on that eavesdropping, you know, surveillance watch list, then you can't sue. You can't do anything about it.
Isn't that convenient?
Yeah. I mean, I wish it were a bigger story because I think it's a huge story. Like, if we had some sort of semblance of a normal world right now, there would be like legal scholars on the front page of the New York Times saying how like atrocious this ruling is. And oh my God, we all need to be out in the streets because this is the end of American democracy, you know, but about so many other things as well. But it's a blip. It's here. It's gone. It's crazy to me. All right, Johnny, let's talk about this Oregon law. I know you wanted to get into this for a couple of minutes. I'll pull it up right now.
It's crazy.
Oh, geez, man. This is like one of those cases of like, you know, going so far one way, you become the other. Guys, in my opinion, this is just pretty racist. But we got here, Oregon governor signs bill removing reading, writing, and math requirements for high school kids to help, quote, students of color. Yeah, you heard me right.
So Oregon governor help them to not know math.
Well, because it's too hard for, like, non-white people to read.
That sounds racist.
It's fuck. It's didn't do it. It's super.
What did you say?
Oregon Governor Kate Brown quietly signed a bill last month that, like, why would you even be quiet about it? I wonder. Quietly signed a bill last month that removed the requirement for graduating high school children in the state to be proficient in reading, writing, and math in an effort to aid, quote, students of color. Brown signed Senate Bill 744 on July 14th, but did not issue a press release or hold a ceremony to mark the occasion, instead opting to pass the bill into law as quietly as possible. According to the Oregonian, the bill also wasn't entered into a legislative database until 2 weeks after its signing, an abnormality as bills are typically entered on the same day. Though Brown was quiet about the bill, the governor's deputy communications director, Charles Boyle, told the Oregonian, I don't know how to say that, that suspending the reading, writing, and math proficiency requirements would benefit students of color while the state comes up with a new set of, quote, equitable graduation standards. So what's that mean? Like just if you're colored, then you don't have to try as hard? I'm not sure. Until then, the suspension will apparently help those who are Black, Latino, Latina, Latinx, which is all literally the same thing, Indigenous, Asian, Pacific Islander, or tribal. Boyle said leaders from those communities have advocated time and time again for equitable graduation standards, along with expanding learning opportunity and supports. However, lawmakers have supposedly not passed any actual concrete support this year to help those groups. Any new graduation requirements that do pass will reportedly not take effect till 2027, meaning 5 years of classes could graduate without needing to demonstrate the proficiency in those areas. The Republicans attempted to push back against the bill. Oregon House Minority Leader Christine Drazen, argued that it would lower our expectation for our kids at a time when we have had this year of social isolation, lost learning due to COVID-19. They were unsuccessful, however, as the Democrat-controlled legislature overwhelmingly supported the move.
So that's how you build back better. You just don't test the students.
Isn't that just so America? Let's just lower the standards.
Rubber stamp some high school graduation stuff, but make sure they make it through the cop monitored hallways for 12 years. You know, yeah. Legal point now.
Wow. I mean, as someone who may very well one day have a mixed child, that is extremely disturbing to me and insulting, because it's like, I mean, what specifically would cause you to think that, you know, Black kids or Latin kids or any of those minorities would have any more trouble learning math or reading? I mean, just because like that's just looking at them purely from statistical standpoint, is it not? Like, well, statistically these groups aren't doing as well. It's like, you know, what happened to like the rising tide raises all boats? You know, maybe we should try to like have a something that goes across the board, huh?
I think you had it earlier when you said, I think this is racist. I think that's probably what, yeah. And this is should be referred to as. And you're right, it is like it's objectionable, it's offensive. I mean, like, I'm not sitting here like, oh, let's be offended, but that's the build back.
I am offended. Equality.
You know, that's their great reset. Equality.
Successful mathematician of at all. I got enough mixed blood in here to argue it.
I mean, wouldn't that hypothetically make white students smarter? Not that
science proves that or nothing. No, it doesn't. So
it's stupid, and I'm not surprised it's happened in Oregon. No offense to anybody listening in Oregon. Johnny, you want to jump into your next story? You had another one that's interesting for us.
Pull out your tinfoil hats, boys.
All right, let's do it. And this week's tinfoil hat news proved right.
Dubai making its own rain to beat the 120 degree heat. So for those of you who have heard terms like cloud seeding and been called an idiot tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist, vindication is here. That's one way to beat the heat. Officials in Dubai are using drones to artificially increase rainfall as the city grapples with oppressive heat. Video this week shows rainmaking technology known as, quote, cloud seeding, which, I mean, I'm pretty sure that was being... Derek might have had that research that more back in the day. Was that something that we knew about? Cloud seeding? It was there from the beginning of the geoengineering discussion, correct? That's what
yeah, like the leak. there's been a company, my bad, a company since 2010 called weatherengineering.com, I think is a website that's been promoting cloud seeding for years. I mean, it's that's why it's so silly when people downplay it, but go on.
Yeah, I just wanted to confirm that. I knew you were a little bit more well-read on it. But yeah, it was put in as a summer temperatures have surged past 120 degrees, which in their argument, that is ridiculous. We went to Vegas and it was like 118 and that is very hot. So, but I'm not sure if this is the answer. Experts have said the technology aims to make rain from more efficiently inside clouds and in doing so make more water come down. Drones are used to shoot electrical charges into clouds, causing them to clump together and trigger more rainfall. Footage shared this Sunday by UAE's National Center of Meteorology showed the intense showers flooding roads in addition to flashes of lightning. Rain, so I guess they can make lightning too, or thunderstorm, I suppose. Rainmaking has become common in dry counties such as United Arab Emirates, which typically only records 4 inches of rain a year. The global water shortage is worsening in many parts of the world, so the demand for fresh water is increasing, said Linda Zhu, a professor at UAE's Khalifa University of Science and Technology. Cloud seeding could be one of the methods that can contribute to alleviating the water problem. And they have a cool little graph here at the bottom showing the charging, planes farting out some ion emissions here, and causing evaporation, growth, explosion, yeah, all that stuff. You wonder if the meteorologists are going to be 100% accurate in 10 years because they're the ones making the weather. It's like, I don't know. I mean, what do you think this means for the future? Like, have they been doing this forever and, like, not telling us? Could they make a hurricane? Could they make a tornado? And those are some obvious questions that probably aren't being asked by everybody, but... You know, the people who have thought about this, like, I mean, hypothetically, could they make it rain on a protest? Could they, I don't know, like, there's a bunch of weird things, and, like, we all know what happens when science meets nature, and we like to play God, and here we go again, and now it's all out in the open, and, like, well, you were silly 10 years ago, but now we're doing it for just the heat. That's the only reason we're doing it. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, Johnny, to answer a couple of the questions you put forward there, because you're right. Like, they, for one, they can and they have experimented with manipulating hurricanes, the lightning thing I'd never heard of, but that's not surprising. And I'm going to try to pull up on screen real quick something called Operation Popeye that maybe some of our audience had heard of. This is when they were cloud seeding in Vietnam. They did make it rain on the enemy as like a part of their the battle. They tried to, they were successful. You can look it up, Operation Popeye. During the Vietnam War, they were basically trying to expand the monsoon season, extend it as a defense when they were trying to fight the Viet Cong. So it's been going on for a long time, and people haven't realized
that's just
one level of it, you know? Yeah, you know, there's also geoengineering. Like, I'd never heard of what you're describing there, where they're saying the drone is like kind of electrically charging the clouds. I've seen the cloud seeding where they send out like different silver ions and things into the clouds to create rain. And now we're seeing like the big talks of geoengineering, spraying particles in the sky to block out the sun to stop climate change. You know, there's a number of different ways that they have been experimenting on weather for over 100 years. Well, you know, well over 100 years now at this point. And I actually put an article out there you can find about, if you go to theconsciousresistance.com, just search hurricanes. And I did a report on this a couple of years ago because of all the weird weather that is happening that is blamed on climate change, but they don't talk about these types of programs. And it's not surprising. You mentioned there was flooding in Dubai and it's, you know, kind of, it's not typical. Well, that's one of the things people and scientists smarter than myself have been warning in different studies about geoengineering cloud seeding, saying that when you start messing with the weather, you can't really determine how it's going to affect other areas. And you might increase the rain in one area and then create a drought in another, you know, and, or maybe you end up with, it doesn't go right. And you end up with a freak storm that turns into flooding. You know, they really can't control it as well as they would like to believe is what it seems to be.
That's the whole playing God aspect. Like, you think you know what you got it, but maybe once the cat's out of the bag,
Yeah, but I'm glad you brought that one up because we hadn't covered that. And I think it is important to remind people that those kinds of things are a fact, that they're out there, you know, and it's now out in the open policy, you know, that these other countries are doing it. They've been doing it in China as well.
I think humans will always try to interact and control the environment and the nature around them in diverse ways. And I think that's one of the reasons that an openness about it is what's important, because I don't think the problem is manipulating, or however you want to call it, praying, manipulating, or doing a rain dance, whatever it may be that helps or attempts to manipulate the universe and nature. I don't think that action is wrong, but perhaps, you know, dropping chemicals on the people, there could be some side effects of that, you know, or flooding, or, you know, these sort of things. And so if we're doing that, I think we need to be open about it. But, you know, of course, everything's got to be turned into division and war, which makes everything have to be a secret, you know. So we can't talk about it, because if we talked about it, it wouldn't be a power deal.
One more thing on that, and I'll get to our last story. I know we've been going for almost an hour and a half. Thanks to everybody who's been here with us all night for Freethinker Radio. One more point on the weather engineering thing. You guys remember, I know we've come across at some point over the years, this U.S. Navy document called Owning the Weather by 2025. The full title is Weather is a Force Multiplier. And that's when they are openly talking about that they, you know, it's supposed to be, there were conventions and UN conventions and treaties that all the countries signed, you know, supposedly they won't engage in weather warfare, whatever. But it's just interesting that we're coming into that time, you know, where the military, I think this paper came out in 1997 originally, and it was called Owning the Weather by 2025, Weather is a Force Multiplier. So just putting that out there, like you said, Micah, they are using, you know, it goes to weapons of war, not to like, hey, can we, supposedly it's to help the climate and whatever else, but it seems like other things are going on. Anyways, I'm going to hit us for some good news. Last story of the evening, some good news, something positive. It does tie back to where we started out an hour and a half ago talking about Mayor Turner in Houston. Micah loves referring to him, rightly so, as the 5G champion. And why is it, Micah? You know, you're not just shouting that for random reason. Tell everybody what that's about.
I just think it's cute. No, it's a promo ad, right? It's a promo ad, right? Didn't a cell phone company give it to him as a corporatist award or something?
It was a corporatist award. So it was the CTIA, which is basically it's the Cellular Telephone Internet Association, which is, in my research, is like essentially big wireless. Like it's this giant lobbying group. And yeah, they awarded him in 2018 with the 5G wireless champion for helping reduce regulations and restrictions and making it easier. And then the CEO of Verizon came all the way from Sweden to Houston to have a press conference with the mayor so they could announce it and celebrate it. And I began questioning the mayor. Many of us have, and there's been, you know, meetings and protests and city council visits and documentaries and all the stuff, all the different ways you think you could try to get somebody to pay attention, and corruption behind many doors. Interesting, you know, many doors, not just city council. And I sort of stepped away from it for a little while. I haven't really been focusing so much on 5G with my work at the moment. Just not that I don't care, or not that it's going away. It's just, you know, I just need to regroup, I guess. But thankfully, other people are still fighting, and we have a victory to celebrate in the last week on August 13th. Several nonprofits, the two lead nonprofits being Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s Children's Health Defense and the Environmental Health Trust, who were joint plaintiffs in this lawsuit against the FCC. And in a landmark decision, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit ruled that the FCC failed to consider evidence of adverse health impacts from wireless technology, including 5G. So a little bit of background on this. The FCC in 1996, they set guidelines, health guidelines for radio frequency radiation. Cell phones at the time, you know, were just coming out. And those standards have been guiding all the different phases of technology since 1996. Here we are, what, 25 years later, and 5G, they're even talking about 6G already and things like that. And they're still basing the placement of towers and small cell antennas and cell phones, et cetera, based on those 1996 standards. The FCC requested public comment in 2013 on should we review these, and they had overwhelming response. You could, you know, see it online. It's all public. People were submitting comments and thousands of comments, including from researchers, doctors, scientists, and citizens as well, talking about how they've been affected by wireless technology. And the FCC ignored all these in December 2019, said, okay, we reaffirmed this. There's no reason to revisit our original guidelines. They're still good. They apply to 5G. And we were all like, what the heck? Well, Children's Health Defense and Environmental Health Trust and other organizations filed a lawsuit then. They submitted 11,000 pages of evidence, scientific evidence of harm from 5G and wireless technology, which the FCC subsequently ignored and said, hey, you know, we're going to stick with our standards. So at that point, Children's Health Defense and RFK Jr.'s, Children's Health Defense and Environmental Health Trust filed their lawsuits, and they ended up becoming consolidated to one single lawsuit. And the judge agreed with them and basically said that the FCC ignored the petitions. And now this ruling doesn't mean that, okay, 5G has been stopped, or, you know, all cell phones need to be recalled or anything kind of monumental like that, but it is still a victory and what will probably be a long drawn out legal battle, as these things tend to be. So the judge basically ruled, let me get to the actual judge's ruling here. Okay, the judge said, quote, the FCC completely failed to acknowledge, let alone respond to, comments concerning the impact of radio frequency radiation on the environment. The record contains substantive evidence of potential environmental harms. The court also stated that the FCC's decision not to review the evidence undermined the commission's conclusions about the adequacy of its testing process. Basically saying, like, how can you say that you have tested it adequately if you just ignored all this, you know, concerns people are submitting to you? The court ruled, quote, the case be remanded to the commission to provide a reasoned explanation for its determination that its guidelines adequately protect against harmful effects of exposure to radio frequency radiation. So again, it's not going to stop anything at the moment, but what it means is that now the FCC is, this is supposed to go back to the FCC now, and I don't know how long this period goes for, but then the FCC is supposed to actually do its job. You know, this is the thing, you have to file a lawsuit, right? You have to get two nonprofits who are hiring expensive lawyers like RFK Jr. and others to file this lawsuit and try to force the FCC to do the job that it's supposed to do, regulate wireless technology. And instead of them doing that, they just ignore the people's voice again, just like in Houston. And they say, oh, it's all good. And now after the lawsuit, now they're like, okay, go back and actually do your job. So, I mean, it's just so crazy that they have to go to that extensive effort to just make them do what they're supposed to do.
It's so annoying, these regulatory captured agencies. Like, I feel like, you know, more than likely if we were to dig into the FCC, how many people have worked for Verizon or Sprint or T-Mobile or any of that kind of stuff. It's like, I mean, what other reason would there be for
an FCC?
Yeah, I mean, we see the same stuff in the EPA, the CDC, and all these kinds of companies. Like, you know, it's like, it's really sad that you know, a bunch of concerned parents have to get together and be the ones who make the difference. But that is great. That is great that you know, they're being forced to do this. And I genuinely hope that there's not any shenanigans that go on with the further court cases or the p-hacking of studies or whatever you want to call it. So, you know,
sounds like we need to keep tracking on this story.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll just say, Johnny, it's kind of a similar thing to the fluoride lawsuit that I covered last summer, right? And it still hasn't been resolved. And this is what I'm worried this will turn into, right? It was like this big epic battle. They're presenting evidence, and the judge is actually hearing the evidence for the first time in federal court of the harms of water fluoridation. And a lot of big moments in that trial that the mainstream totally ignored. But then the judge kind of kicked it down the road and said, okay, EPA, revisit it again one more time. And then, like, it's just this extension. Here we are. This case was June 2020. I think they're supposed to meet again in September, maybe. But it's been like three or four times that they meet again. It gets kicked down the road again. So I hope that doesn't happen with this 5G thing. But either way, what I will say, to me, in the sort of information propaganda battle, these are the kinds of things that I look at as this is a good example of something to take to your friends and family that think that, oh, you're crazy for questioning the dangers of radio frequency radiation, because we've all been told it's safe. It's non-ionizing. It can't harm you. But here we are. And there is a three-panel federal judge circuit saying, hey, like, this is something worth revisiting. The FCC needs to do its job. Like, but typically, again, put on your tinfoil hat. There's no weather engineering. There's no problems with 5G. Water fluoridation is great. And we have all this evidence.
Yeah, it does legitimize, what did you say, like 11,000 pages of evidence?
Yeah.
So it does legitimize those 11,000 pages of evidence, at least to the extent that the judge said, well, this is legitimate and needs to be relooked at, you know, so. You're right in that aspect, and it's a good fight, and people, I'm glad someone's, you know, standing up for us and standing up for our health and our children's health.
Absolutely. All right, guys, that's all I got. I think that's all we got tonight. Any other final thoughts? I'm glad we were able to do this. We covered a lot. Thanks to everybody who's been with us, everyone DLive and Float.
We covered a lot of strong stuff. Thanks, guys, for letting me be part of it. I had a blast. Lots of good information. And thanks everybody for contributing. We've seen a lot of stuff go by, and I think this felt like an old school Freethinker Radio for a little bit. We would have played about another half an hour of music, and that would have been that.
Yeah. Any other thoughts, Johnny?
No, that's it, man. I'm good.
All right, guys. We'll be back next week. Peace.
Deuces.
I'm the last one they should ever let speak. I should say politics for dead pros and the
immortal technique.
Our way of life is under attack. The survival of our friends is in danger.
There's a new housing plan for the ghetto eventually. Projects for a new American century. False flag terrorism controlling you mentally. The gospel in the hands of people with no empathy. A mixture of dangerous social chemistry between law enforcement and a military entity. Cameras on the corner of every corner you facing. Testing out a future Gestapo on immigration. Power, consolidation, information restricted. Just like the iron law of oligarchy predicted. Incarcerating the poor among the drug addicted. But not the families of the ruling class that's afflicted. Cause it's a fucking caste system like corrupted Hinduism. I think you should listen. I've been through the system in prison. I've been through religion. Carried the cross as a Christian. Like it was anti-disestablishmentarianism. Until the seeds of despotism arrested my vision. Lyricism with cynicism and syllogisms. Until they bed through Albizu Campos and kill me in prison. Chemtrail conditions. Stem cells of Leo Strauss's philosophy. The birth of neocon policy. But I laugh at America's fear. A new world order controlling the hemisphere. Cause my people been living that for the past 500 years.
Intelligence, understanding, the facts they deserve to know. No governmental plan should impose its restraints, against your will.
Who do we trust?
The facts.
Who do we trust?
Intelligence.
Who can I trust? Who can I trust?
Expose crimes of the power structure. Enter the fire. Cause the truth is now treason to the U.S. Empire. U.S. meddling in almost every foreign election. See where the next drone heading. Civilian dead in the Yemen wedding. Barely reported because the weapons were exported from the politicians in the Pentagon. The Saudis bought it and the babies and the children were slaughtered. The authorization, altercation, deplorable, demoralization, obedience to authority, colonize the minority. Social norm is to conform to the immoral majority. White superiority, secession of separatism, the terrorism of American exceptionalism. Go to plan B, be free, fuck the TV, fuck the PD, fuck a Tuskegee VD, grave plot, soldier pop, corpse rot, spin over. Monsanto weed killer, non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Whistleblower, men are afraid of label, the threat of traitor. Executive legislator trying to suppress your behavior. Intelligence interrogator, collecting metadata, condemning the messenger and censoring the educator. CIA feed the propaganda to the television. In the next edition, the pundits preach it in repetition. Loyal to the monarchy, hereditary or elected. Fuck a royal family and fuck a president selected.
Secret society. The secret oaths. Censorship. Imposing restraints against your will.
Who do we trust?
The facts.
Who do we trust?
Intelligence.
Who can I trust?
Who can I trust? Informing. And alerting. The American people.
What's the cadet motto at West Point? You will not lie, cheat, or steal, or tolerate those who do. I was the CIA director. We lied, we cheated, we stole. We had entire training courses. It reminds you of the glory of the American experiment.